From the central coast of California, across the nation, and around the world, bringing you conscious living through positive thinking. It's time to turn the lead in your life into gold. It's Good Vibrations Radio on Radio Monterey.
I love the colorful clothes she wears and the way the sunlight plays upon her head. I hear the sound of on the wind that lifts her perfume through the air.
I'm picking up her vibrations. She's giving me excitations. I'm picking up.
Well, hello, I'm Solazar, and welcome to Good Vibrations Radio, Tools for Transformation, right here on Radio Monterey. Now, quantum physics tells us that we are all energy vibrating at different frequencies, and in Good Vibrations Radio, we bring you information that allows you to change the vibrational frequency of your life. We are your source for everyday alchemy, so you can take the lead in your life and turn it into gold. Good Vibrations Radio is made possible through the sponsorship of Magic for Life, which is the owner-operator of Radio Monterey. And at Radio Monterey, we bring you information unfiltered, uncensored by the corporate media. Listen to Radio Monterey, take a look at the shows and the hosts, and get the information that will allow you to be better informed and make better choices in your life. In addition, Magic for Life is the promoter-producer of the Rhoda Psychic Fair, which is coming back to the Monterey Fairgrounds this month, the 29th and 30th. Yes, it's Halloween weekend, Samhain, All Saints Day, All Souls Day, the Day of the Dead, the time when the veils between the worlds are thin, and that means only one thing. It's time to have fun. Come in costume. Come as who you might have been. Come as who you might become. Come as who you are. But no matter how you choose to do it, visit rhodapsychicfair.com. Get on the email list so you can get your discount coupons. And come to the Rhoda Psychic Fair October 29th and 30th at the Monterey Fairgrounds. Well, we have made it to the 11th of October. Now, in the last Go With the Flow, Kirilani had shared that October, of course, is this month of being your own guru. What does that mean? It means stop looking outside of yourself for people who have the wisdom and the knowledge and the information that you need to study. Get the information that other people have, because we're all masters. We're all gurus. Find out which pieces apply to you, which pieces feel right for you, which pieces are the right clothes for you to wrap yourself in. And then continue to get more pieces of information that suit you. Remember, our spiritual journey is actually a personal journey. There's no one method. There's no one message. There's no one modality that fits everyone. We all adopt and apply those modalities that fit us in some way, shape, or form. And we get to play with them and shift them and alter them. We have a lot of latitude going into that. So here we are, the 11th of October, 2016. Now, one thing I want to touch on, only because it comes up, and it will come up in the conversation with our guest a little later. We just yesterday had the federal holiday for Columbus Day. I want to say for the record, why are we still doing a holiday to this individual? He did not discover America. He enslaved indigenous people. He passed out smallpox-infused blankets to those indigenous people, and he took whatever he could from them for where he saw value, because they were open and sharing and caring. He is not an admirable individual, and if he lived in today's times, there's a good likelihood he would be on the staff of Donald Trump. Just my opinion. But today is the 11th of October. And as you know, I love me some Day by Day with James Allen. Now, James Allen wrote his essay, As a Man Thinketh, in 1903. And he took the title from chapter 23, verse 7 of Proverbs, which says, "As a man thinketh in his heart, so is he." It's then been used throughout time. Napoleon Hill took a portion of that framework into Think and Grow Rich. Earl Nightingale took it into You Become What You Think About Most, in For the Strangest Secret. So there are many people that have adapted and adopted it. And of course, it was most recently applied in both the book and the DVD of The Secret. So really, what is the point from James Allen? He wants us to know that our present reality is a direct outcome of our past thoughts and actions. But our past thoughts and actions don't create our future. Our present thoughts and actions create our future. So every day we have a new opportunity when we awaken to start creating our new future now in a new and very different way. We're not predetermined, predestined, fated, or condemned by yesterday. We get to start anew each and every day. And in Day by Day with James Allen, his words from his essay have been broken up to a little segment for each day of the month. And for the 11th, this is so appropriate when we get to our guest, you'll understand. But for the 11th day of the month, he says, the formula for success. He conceives of, mentally builds up, an ideal condition of life. The vision of a wider liberty and a larger scope take possession of him. Unrest urges him to action, and he utilizes all his spare time and means, small though they are, to the development of his latent powers and resources. Essentially, James Allen is telling us, it doesn't matter how much time or how much resources you have. Plant that seed in your mind. Think about it. Get the vision of what you can do with it. Take action toward it. Be in the unrest stage. That's really where you're just itching to do something about it. Don't let yourself be held back by insufficient resources, insufficient time. You take the time available. And ultimately, the time you need will expand as time goes on. So let me say it again, the formula for success. He conceives of, mentally builds up an ideal condition of life. The vision of a wider liberty and a larger scope take possession of him. Unrest urges him to action, and he utilizes all his spare time and means, small though they are, to the development of his latent power and resources. Napoleon Hill in Think and Grow Rich, he had an anonymous poem that says, I bargained with life for a penny, and life would pay no more. However, I begged at evening when I counted my scanty score. For life is just an employer. He gives you what you ask, but once you have set the wages, why, you must bear the task. I worked for a menial's hire, only to learn, dismayed, that any wage I had asked of life, life would have willingly paid. The blocks, the barriers, the boundaries we use to say we cannot, we are not capable, we don't have the time, we don't have the energy, we are not the person who can do this. Those are the boundaries and blocks that we built. Or as Liliana Bethany likes to share, locks, blocks, and governors. Which ones have you put in your life that are keeping you from living close to your passion, that are keeping you from experiencing the joy, the happiness of your passion? Today's daily word says, I let go and welcome the divine's blessing. The answer I seek already exists. And part of that answer is coming up right now with our guest this evening.
Ora Nadrich is a certified life coach, mindfulness meditation teacher, and author. She's a blogger for the Huffington Post, and her work has been featured in Yahoo Health, Mind Body Green, Women's Health, Conscious Lifestyle Magazine, Elevated Existence, Success Magazine, and many more. New York Times bestselling author Marianne Williamson says Ora Naidrich is a treasure. Her voice bears the passion of her own experience. She's able to reach deep into our hearts because she's culled so much wisdom from her own. Today she joins us to talk about her book, Says Who, How One Simple Question Can Change the Way You Think Forever. Ora, welcome to Good Vibrations Radio.
Hi, Solarzar. Thank you for having me.
It's truly a pleasure. Now, Says Who, How One Simple Question Can Change the Way You Think Forever is really a culmination of your own journey and experience into your own thought process. As I read through the book, I noticed that you shared in the beginning your story of your family. So for the listeners, can you tell us a little bit about the events that caused you to go into your own self-examination?
Sure. Well, my journey, my Says Who journey, really began at that time. And that was, I was about 15 years old or soon to be 15 years old, and my sister had a devastating nervous breakdown. And it was just tragic and devastating for all of us. And she was very special to me. I looked up to her, and she was just an extraordinary spirit. And one minute it seemed to me that she was fine and vibrant and just living this incredible, passionate life. And the next thing I know, she is no longer that person. And it was just devastating, as I said. And I really went into tremendous fear when she became ill, and I went into a fight-or-flight state. And when we go into fight-or-flight, we immediately feel that our survival is threatened, and we tell ourselves many things like, oh, my God, I'm not going to be okay. Oh, my God, I'm going to die. You know, all of that comes to the foreground of our minds. And for me, the thought that really took hold in my psyche was, oh, my God, this is going to happen to me. And that thought really took hold, and it stayed in my mind. But what it did is it got buried into my subconscious, which I call in my book, Says Who, the storage room of all of our experiences and our memories and everything that we have happened to us that we store, as I did with that thought. And I lived my life with this sort of low-grade fever, if you will, of anxiety, but I didn't know why, because I wasn't connecting to that thought that had took hold in my mind, as I said. And what I started to experience were these side effects, you know, these symptoms, if you will, for a thought that we believe is true. So that anxiety started to remain with me for a very long time, and I didn't know why. And so fast forward to, I went on a very deep and intense psycho-spiritual journey to find out why I was feeling this anxiety. And that was really the Says Who beginnings of my journey.
Why is it that we're so willing to believe something negative about ourselves, and we have such a struggle to believe something positive about ourselves?
You know, I think that's such a good question, and I think that's something we can all relate to. I mean, what I say in the book is that, you know, statistics claim that we think somewhere up between 40 and 70,000 thoughts a day. And that's a staggering amount of thinking that's going on in that mind of ours. And a good percentage of those thoughts don't serve our well-being. I think there's different theories about that. You know, I wrote a book that really wants you to understand that that's part of your thinking process. We do not think positive thoughts every minute of the day. You know, perhaps it's because we came from this sort of hunter and gatherers, and it's part of the brain. I mean, I can't break down the brain specifically. I know there are fear centers. Perhaps it's the amygdala. I don't know. But that's part of the functioning of the brain. Maybe perhaps it's an old, maybe it's a reptilian part of our brain function, and that we need to transcend that. So we know that it's there, that it exists, that we're going to go into fear state. And if in fact that's true, that we come from, you know, yes, we do come from hunter and gatherers, and our lives were such that we went out to hunt for food, and we had to be on high alert for our survival and safety for fear that a saber-toothed tiger might jump out and leap and have us for lunch, So that, you know, I think when we understand that we have all these ins and outs and intricacies and nooks and crannies of the thinking mind, and that negativity is a part of that. And so specifically to why we don't embrace positive thinking versus negative thinking, I think that we are changing. And this is what Says Who is proposing, is that we have these brilliant thinking minds and we are the creator and master of our inner dialogue. Can you entertain the possibility of transforming those negative thoughts into positive, wondrous, miraculous thoughts?
And although it's not the core of Says Who, one of the things you do incorporate is obviously the idea of this mindfulness practice, this mindfulness meditation. Can you share a little bit how you began to explore mindfulness meditation and how you recommend we look at that as a type of daily practice that can actually help shift our thinking?
Well, on my psycho-spiritual journey, I explored all sorts of different modalities and teachings and wisdom teachings, if you will. And one of the things that I explored deeply was Buddhism, and I learned about mindfulness. You know, this is an ancient technique. It's a quality that each and every one of us has, but we don't necessarily use. And mindfulness, in the most simplest way explained, is that it's being in the present moment with total awareness. So us having this interview together right now, this is the most real moment that we're in, because we're in it. We're alive, speaking in this moment. And oftentimes the mind wanders to the past, which has already come and gone, or into the future of a time frame that doesn't exist as of yet. So the practice of mindfulness is to stay present moment by moment. And when we're present, and it really does complement my method, Says Who, because you have to be present to observe your thinking mind so that you can go into that state, so that you can understand your thoughts better and what they're trying to tell you, and be able to work through those negative thoughts to transform them into positive thoughts that serve your well-being. So that is mindfulness, is being present.
And that probably leads us directly to your Says Who method. Can you share with the listeners a little bit about the questioning technique, what led you to that, and how you distilled it down to the 7 questions you share in the book?
Well, how it really began, again, is that when I became a certified life coach, I started to work with my clients, and with quite a few of them, I started to see a similar thinking pattern. And I had one client in particular that I was working with who was on, what appeared to be a very upward mobile trajectory of creating a new business, and she was a very creative woman. And right in the midst of our session together, she blurted out, "I'm afraid I'm going to be homeless, that I'm going to be destitute."
Mm.
And it was just incredible to me, because here she was talking about starting a new business when out of the blue came this fear-based thought. And I listened to her and I thought, well, this is like observing somebody with 2 working minds, one positive moving forward in her life to manifest what she wants to create, and this other thinking mind, which is negative and wanting to sabotage what she wants to create. Well, I identified with that very quickly. I thought, oh, I know that. I've had that I'm not her particular boogeyman thought, but I had my own boogeyman thought, which, as I told you in the beginning of my personal journey, was a thought that took hold in my mind, and here's a thought that has taken hold in her mind. So that came to the surface of my mind in that moment, and the question that I asked her that just immediately came out of my mind, which was taking a risk, I said, "Says Who?" Well, that just stopped her right in her tracks. You know, it just literally like zapped that thought right in its tracks. And then I took it one step further, which is the second question of my method, the Says Who method. I said to her, "Have you heard someone say that thought before? Is that your original thought?" Well, I saw this incredible transformation happen right in front of me with her. She got, her eyes widened like saucers. She got very emotional and teary-eyed, and she got very quiet, and she said, took a deep breath in and said, I grew up hearing my father say that all the time, and it used to scare me so much, and I lived in such fear. My father would come home. He had a difficult working history of, you know, failed working jobs and then some high successful ones. So a lot of erratic, you know, working things happened with him. And his fear became her fear. And that was a perfect example. And I knew I was onto something with that. I knew that by asking her says who, and was that her original thought, and saw this incredible transformation happened right before my eyes, which I had experienced myself with my fear-based thought, I knew that this was really important and this could change people's lives. And so what I set out to do is I set out to write this book, Says Who, and I created what I felt were 7 of the most crystal clear, lucid questions to ask oneself to be able to deconstruct a negative thought, and to look at it like under a microscope, to see it for what it really is, to see that it is either real or it's an illusion, and to be able to then replace that thought with something that's positive and life-affirming and that can serve your well-being. And that was how it all came to be.
Are you willing to share the 7 questions with the listeners?
Absolutely. So, beginning with the very first question that I've said, which is, says who? And starting with that very first question, basically you are asking yourself, who is saying this thought in my mind? And it's really taking ownership over that thought. It's being willing to face this thought that is in your own mind. And that is the beginning of wanting to work with it. So the second question is, have I heard someone say this thought before? Very important, after you identify the thought in your mind, as to who said this thought. Is it you? Is it your original thought? Or have you heard someone say this before? And many, many people that I've worked with have come to realize that this thought, like this woman, that they've been carrying around since childhood into adulthood, is a thought that was not even their own, but that they heard a parent, a teacher, an authority figure, or even a bully on the schoolyard had said that to them long ago, and that they held that thought as real and as true and kept it as a belief. The third question is one of my favorites, and quite simple and logical. Do I like this thought? Well, if you're thinking a negative or fear-based thought, I want you to ask yourself, first and foremost, do you like this thought? And then why would you think a thought that you don't even like? I worked with somebody one day who was really on what I call the hamster wheel, you know, where you keep thinking the same thought over and over and over again with no positive results. And she was in the midst of thinking a negative thought and saying it out loud, and I asked her that question. I said, let me ask you something. Do you like that thought? Again, these thoughts are so logical. These questions are so logical that they stop you in your tracks. And she said to me, no, I don't like that thought. As a matter of fact, I hate that thought. And she said it with so much, you know, vehement passion. You know, and I said, oh, interesting. So you not only don't like this thought, you hate that thought. And yet you're willing to let it take up time and energy in your mind. And that was quite illuminating for her. The fifth question is, does this thought work for me? And like the fourth question, do you like this thought? Excuse me, the fourth question is, does this thought make me feel better? And like the third question, do I like this thought? If you're thinking a negative or fear-based thought, ask yourself how it's making you feel better. If you can tell yourself how that thought is making you feel better, then a negative thought is something that you rely on to make yourself feel better. And I think you really want to look at that and what is that about. The fifth question, does this thought work for me? Again, how is your negative thought working for you? Is it working for you favorably? Is it making your life better? Is it making you feel better, the question before that? You know, again, very logical questions to ask yourself. It really has you confront something that you know, if you want to change your thinking mind, these are the questions to ask yourself, because they're going to make total sense to you if you're going to be honest with yourself. The sixth question, am I in control of this thought? Well, as we know, even though we are creating our own thoughts, there isn't a little person that crawls inside our head and slips these thoughts into our mind. We are creating them. So if you feel that you are in control of this thought, or the other way around, this negative thought is controlling you, then you need to ask yourself, why would you continue, again, to give time and energy to a negative thought that has control over you, and you're the one that's created it? And the final question is, do I want to keep this thought or let it go? So basically, if you have declared this negative thought to yourself, you've identified where it came from, you've decided if you like it or not, you've decided if this thought either makes you feel better or doesn't, or if that thought works for you positively or negatively, or if you're in control of this thought, if you want to keep a negative thought still, or decide to let it go, now is the time to ask yourself if you're ready to do that. And those are the seven questions.
Yeah, that's an astonishing array of questions when we go through it. And I've gone through them several times. In your book, you give specific examples. For instance, when we don't like a person, or we think we're stupid, or different, or are we lovable? And you give specific examples of walking those questions through those situations. But as I was going through, I kept asking myself, is this complete? Is something missing? And as you even went through it just now, it just, to me, is complete. That's it. It covers everything that we could possibly want to interrogate ourselves about a thought. One thought I did have, though, is, does this thought make me feel better? Or does this thought work for me? Is very often, I think we use that thought to feed the thought itself. In other words, it's like it's eating itself. Mm-hmm. So we keep using that thought to reiterate the negative thought as it comes back to ourselves.
Absolutely, and I think that's very true. Listen, if you're attached to your negative thoughts, if they, whatever it is, it's so personal for people. You know, sometimes people really defend their negative thoughts because it's all they know, and they've lived with them for so long, it's become such a deep part of their comfort level, even though it causes them a lot of suffering. You know, it's sometimes, you know, that saying, the devil you know is sometimes better than the devil you don't know, although I don't really want to use that word per se, but it's an example of how the fear that people have of really letting go of something that's so familiar to them, even if it's frightening and difficult and painful and cause them suffering, because they're so afraid to release it because they don't know what to expect in its place. Why don't you find out? Try it. Try asking yourself those questions. Try, and I have something in the book called Release and Replace. Are you willing to release a negative thought and replace it with something that's positive and life-affirming? Do you know? And so holding on to something, like you said, that, you know, you're even attached to it, even being attached to a negative thought, if you're willing to ask yourself, what does that thought do for you? How does it work for you? And really be honest with yourself. You know, if you want to declare to yourself that you want to remain a negative person, then that's your prerogative. Do you know, this book is for those people that want to change their thinking process. And I can tell you something, it's very empowering, because you are the creator and master of your inner dialogue, which creates your reality. What do you want that to be? I mean, you're pretty powerful. We are extraordinary. We're walking around with this, what I call this Learjet of a thinking mind. Don't you want to be a really good pilot to know how to fly that thing?
I think you said something there that I think is very powerful for the people listening too. It's a question of, do you want to change your thinking?
Yeah.
Because maybe you don't.
Maybe you don't.
And if you don't, it's almost like To me, it's like the fox and the grapes from Aesop's fable, where the Fox sees this great bunch of grapes and thinks how wonderful they would be. I'll just jump up and get them. And he tries, and then he runs and he tries, and he keeps trying, and he keeps missing. And then he looks at them and says, well, they're probably sour anyway. So if we're stuck in our they're sour anyway, and like you said, that's where we're comfortable, that's where we want to live,
right.
Then says who, how one simple question can change the way you think forever, may not work for you because you don't want it to.
Absolutely. You're so correct about that. I really want people to understand how powerful and extraordinary they are.
Mm.
You know, I want them to be able to experience the vastness of their thinking mind. Do you know, we have this extraordinary gift. It's called the thinking mind, and it belongs to each and every one of us. And we can create the most extraordinary things in our mind. And I say, what we hold in our mind's eye, we can create and manifest outside of ourselves. I find that to be just fascinating and extraordinary. And really, for me, I just want to offer that up to everyone else as a possibility, to be able to hold that in their mind's eye. I mean, all the people that created extraordinary things that we know of, do you know, Christopher Columbus, you know, Plato, Socrates, you know, on and on and on, from inventions and discoveries and all of these extraordinary things that have happened that have paved the way for our lives, are people that had a single thought that they held in their mind's eye and they believed it to be true. And we are the beneficiaries of that. And each and every one of us has that ability. Isn't that incredible?
It truly is. And as a matter of fact, it's Marianne Williamson herself who said what we're most afraid of is our power, that we are powerful beyond all measure.
Absolutely.
And Absolutely. We're afraid to touch into our power as if it's a responsibility that's too great for us. But yet it is.
But isn't that, but and again, that's a belief. Because if you think that, then you've created a belief that you've bought into.
Mm.
You know, can you hold that as a single thought? I am powerful. Just hold that thought alone. I am powerful. You know, when I speak in the book about reaching our goals and our desires, you have a goal that you want to reach. You have to support it with a thought that holds that belief so that you can manifest it. You don't say, oh, I want to, you know, climb this mountain, but I don't think I can. Those cancel each other out. So if you can hold a positive thought just by itself and just see what it feels like inside your being, is it making you uncomfortable? Is it making you want to squirm? Is it making you want to deny it? Is it making you want to bury it? Do you know why? Why is it making you uncomfortable? I'm really asking you to just look at it and be with it. It's okay. Do you know, maybe to just say, when you say to yourself, I am powerful beyond measure, you are uncomfortable believing that about yourself.
Mm.
Maybe somebody many, many, many years ago made you feel that you weren't powerful. We don't come into the world like that. We are powerful. We're divine spirits that come into the universe. And, you know, we are birthed into this incarnation. Did we come in thinking those thoughts? Do you believe you came into this world thinking you're not powerful beyond measure? Or did you learn that somewhere? And where did you learn it? Where did you hear it? I bet you could remember.
Yes, certainly most of that is reinforced to us environmentally by the people we're around or the situations we're around. And as a result of that reinforcement, we adopt it as truth.
Absolutely. It's all distorted perception. Do you know that we took on something that it was not true and believed it? And that is a perception. And when did it become altered? You know, all you have to do is look at children. You know, you and I talked before the show about our cats, you know, the purity of the spirit of us, the spirit of an animal. So pure, so real, so authentic.
Hmm.
You know, and that is who we are, each and every one of us. And somewhere along the line, we took another road. Somewhere on this journey, this incredible journey called life, we took a detour. We went somewhere. Where did we go?
And speaking of detours, I'm going to jump backwards, if you don't mind, to the fact that you had wanted to be an actress, and you actually became an actress.
Yes, I was. I was an actress for 10 years.
Yeah, and it was because of that journey, not because of it, but certainly during that journey of being an actress, that you began to recognize that you had an inner trauma left over from what had occurred with your sister. And I wanted to do a quick little callback that I think many of us are carrying internal traumas that we refuse to identify and recognize and deal with.
Oh, so true, Solazar. That is such an important point. Yes, everybody, I think, has something. You know, you can call it trauma, a memory, a wound, something that comes from many years past, from childhood, that we walk around with. And that's why we want to heal that, you know, to become more whole, to make ourselves more the pure, authentic, true nature of how, what I speak about, we come into the world. And for me, yes, that belief that I had that was part of my personal trauma of what happened to my sister, I carried around for so long, and it affected what I wanted to do with my life because I had fear inside me, and I didn't know why. And, you know, you can walk around in your life with fear and anxiety and sadness and depression, and you don't even know why sometimes. You just think, oh, I'm a depressed person. Oh, I'm a sad person. Oh, I'm negative. Oh, I'm anxious. That is not who we are. We feel that way sometimes, but that's not what defines us.
And one of the guests I had several years ago, we had a discussion that unfortunately in our current society, we seem to act like depression itself is an unnatural state of being, as if happiness is the natural state all the time.
Right.
And yet we live on a continuum, and the continuum has a series of emotional contexts that we go through. So I can have some depression today. I don't have to be depressed. I don't have to be a depressive person. And how we talk to ourselves about many of these things creates or enforces the condition.
Absolutely. I mean, there are many colors in a rainbow. There are many colors in a Crayola box. Do you know, not every day is a sunny day. We can have a gray day. Some beautiful things can come out of a gray day. You can go deeper within yourself, and you can write a great piece of poetry. You might want to be indoors and light a fire and feel the depth of your being. I mean, I remember when I was growing up, the word melancholy was around. It's like obsolete. One day depression is going to be obsolete.
Yeah.
You know, and I want to just say, I didn't write a book about, oh, let's just think positive, positive, positive all the time. That's not real.
Mm-hmm.
We are going to think negative thoughts. We are going to have a sad moment or a sad day. And I even touch upon that in the book about, you know, depression. I didn't write a book about depression, but I mentioned suicide. Do you know, that begins with a thought. You don't wake up one morning and just yawn and go, oh, I think I'm going to kill myself today. Do you know, that's a long time coming. You know, that are very deep thoughts, deep, dark thoughts that grow and fester and fester and fester to the point where that person can no longer stand their pain and discomfort.
Mm.
They've been taken over by a negative mind gone dark.
Mm.
There's no light that can shine through anymore because they don't believe it. And what I'm trying to say is it begins with a single thought. And even when you are feeling a bit of some sadness, and to say, you know, there's that beautiful saying, it's like change is constant, as simple as it is. And that's a lot about what I talk about with meditation. Do you know, for people that don't even do meditation, you know, you can sit quietly and just observe your own thinking mind. Thoughts come and go out of our mind, like the clouds moving in the sky. When we hold on to a thought, it stays. When we let it go, it can go and drift by. It's not permanent. Nothing is permanent.
I'm sorry. We want to remind everyone we're talking to Aura Nadrich, the author of Says Who, How One Simple Question Can Change the Way You Think Forever. And people can go to auranadrich.com. That's auranadrich.com to find out more about the work, the book, and other events that you have going on. So I want to jump back to that whole idea that this is really, this series of questions starting with Says Who is really for anyone who wants to explore why they think the way they do, feel the way they do, or maybe even can question themselves about why have I not allowed myself to live my passion?
Absolutely. Yes. And that can be with anyone, no matter who you are, how old you are, where you're at in your life. It can begin today. Do you know, again, this is the day. This is the moment. This is the moment that exists right now. And you can change your thinking mind today. You can change your thinking mind right this minute. I mean, if I were to say and ask, you know, say, hey, just close your eyes right now and just think of a thought. What do you want that to be? Think of anything. Now, people can say, oh my God, I just got a silly thought. I got a this thought. I got a that thought. I say to people, you know, the other day I was running up my stairs and this random thought came into my mind. I was like, oh, what's that? What's that thought? And I just became the observer, not the reactor. Oh, interesting thought. Okay. Hi, thought. What do you want to tell me? Do you know? Get creative with this process. And anybody and everybody can do it. And if you have a thought that really troubles you and that feels really heavy and it feels really dark, go easy on yourself. Just be with it. Let it be. It doesn't mean you're dark. It doesn't mean you're bad. It doesn't mean you're evil. It means that you have a thought that came visiting in your mind. And you can just go, bing, I release you, thought. Be well, farewell, be gone. I am not my thought. I have thoughts, and I create my thoughts, but I am not my thoughts.
And our thoughts are not our being, necessarily, as you pointed out, which
right.
we tend to think they are. As you said, when we think we are our thoughts, we then become our thoughts.
Absolutely.
It's
and again,
self-fulfilling.
Not to separate yourself, the thinking mind, from who is the thinker. You are the thinker. And you can decide who is the thinker and who is the thinker's thoughts. I mean, I'm not to get esoteric here, but that or
okay.
abstract, but I mean, really, you mustn't diminish your role in this. You mustn't diminish your power, your ability to know that you are weaving these thoughts, thought by thought, and go easy on yourself, you know? Don't berate yourself. Don't beat yourself up. Don't judge yourself in the process of creating your thinking mind. Do you know? I think, you know, lighten up a bit, people. We got to lighten up a bit. we make this all too heavy too often. Do you know? Think of it as a blank canvas. Mm-hmm. What do you want? What paint do you want to throw on that canvas? Well, it's like your thoughts. What thoughts do you want to throw on that canvas? Be the artist. Create a masterpiece.
It seems we forget that we're the driver of the bus of our mind, and we allow the mind to drive the bus.
That's right. Absolutely.
And I think that what you brought out is very profound in that regard. You know, we also talked about your mindfulness practice and the meditations you share with people. Do you think that there's an appropriate meditation to go with this conversation to perhaps help us find ways to just release some of the restrictions that our mind may place on us?
Sure, absolutely. I have the Says Who meditation, but I don't think we have time to go through that those questions. So I'm going to do a sort of condensed version of that. And, you know, really what I'd like people to do, whether you're a meditator or not, everybody in their own way is a meditator, because if you can close your eyes, and that's what I'm going to ask you to do right now, is to, wherever you are, close your eyes and take a deep breath in. And let it go. And take another deep breath in to the core of your being, the center of your true, authentic self. And then release it and let it go. And I want you to think of a thought that makes you feel true to who you are. A thought that supports you, your well-being, your most true, authentic self. And allow that thought to come up. I am is your mantra. I am. What do you want to add to that? I am beautiful. I am divine. I am filled with infinite possibilities. I am the creator of my universe. I am the master of my thinking mind. I am able to make this moment exactly what I choose it to be. I am the true visionary of my life. And from this moment and all the moments that follow, I am the light that will direct me on my journey. Hold that thought in the core of your being and know that it is with you at all times. And when you're ready, open your eyes and take a few minutes just to be with yourself before you ease into the next moment.
Thank you for sharing that. I think that that was very complimentary to what we're discussing for Says Who, how one simple question can change the way you think forever. What would you like people to really take as the core lesson from your book?
I want people to be able to go back home to who they really are. I want them to discover their most real, authentic self, and that they can create whatever life they want to choose for themselves, as I helped guide you with in this meditation, and that it is possible. You can manifest the life you want. You can discover self-realization to your true nature and who you really are. And may this book be a doorway to discover that about yourself. And that I wish for my readers to create that masterpiece, that thinking masterpiece that they are so capable of realizing in their lifetime.
Well, we want to remind folks that they can go to auranadrich.com. The link is on the goodvibrationsradio.com guest page. And they can get their copy of Aura Nadrich Says Who, How One Simple Question Can Change the Way You Think Forever. And also at your website, they can listen to brief excerpts as you do both your book signings and different workshops. And they can get some information that can keep them moving forward if they're willing to actually create for themselves a life, as you said, that comes from their self-truth, their self-realization of who they really are and not who they've come to believe they are based on the inputs of other people that they've adopted as their own. I want to thank you so much for the work that you do and for the book that you've written and for taking your time today to share your wisdom with us.
Thank you so much for having me, Solazar. I so enjoyed it.
Well, thank you. It was a true pleasure. Any final thoughts that you would like to share?
My final thought is think, believe, manifest.
Think, believe, manifest. Well, thank you again. Aura Nadrich Says Who, How One Simple Question Can Change the Way You Think Forever. For all of you out there who are ready to examine, explore, and become.
I want to remind everyone, go to the guest page of goodvibrationsradio.com and connect directly over to the website of Aura Nadrich, the author of Says Who, How One Simple Question Can Change the Way You Think Forever. What I liked about that conversation is that it's asking us to do something that we talk about all the time on this show. Question yourself. What is your true intention? What is your true reasoning underneath it? What's driving you? What's that undying kernel? I was talking to someone earlier about the Rhoda Psychic Fair coming up, and I talked about how in some of my approaches I shifted the way I think about it. And the important part is that when you stop putting boundaries and barriers and gates and marks that must be met, things have a way of reaching their own level in a greater flow. You know, last Friday, Mercury entered Libra. Now, Mercury loves Libra because, after all, it stabilizes the mind. It's looking for harmony. Problem with Libra, of course, Libra sometimes can't make up its mind. But we're going into this period of time when actually Mercury is going to be asking us to look at the things in our lives. And actually, are they the way we want them? Are they as pretty, as organized, as do they really represent us? Are they truly a picture of who we are? Now, since the Sun is in Libra, we're going to find ourselves also going quite heavily in the area of where Libra rules in our lives. Areas like socializing, partying up, prettying up the rough edges of our home, our family, and ourself. That's an important aspect of this Mercury in Libra. Unfortunately, it can also lead to a certain level of nitpickiness, which may cause defensiveness in other people as we're communicating with them during the time Mercury is in Libra. That defensiveness will be represented by people not wanting to be questioned about their choices or what they've chosen to do or how they've chosen to do them. So there's going to be a part where, one, Libra is going to be seeking the harmony and balance with Mercury in our communication, or pushing for the harmony and balance. And at the same time, each of us may feel a little bit more defensive of the decision of what to pretty up, how to pretty up, or how it needs to look. Be very careful that we're not deciding for others. The important aspect is to decide for yourself. Now today, Mars in Capricorn created a sextile with Neptune in Pisces. Now, Mars is our drive and energy planet. It's in that sign of persistence and determination of Capricorn. And then we have Neptune, which is about our unconscious, our subconscious, our dreams. And it's in Pisces, which, of course, is our ethereal, ephemeral, and highly spiritual sign. So we may find ourselves moving forward in a need to find more spirituality in our lives. We may find ourselves looking for what is that spirituality in our lives. I heard an interesting discussion on NPR. I don't remember which show, but they were interviewing an author, and I don't remember the author's name. But essentially what he said is that really, all of us are spiritual beings, and we're always looking at spiritual experiences, but we don't often tag them with the name spiritual. But when you go out and look at the night sky, if you sit and watch the waves come into the bay here in Monterey or any ocean, if you sit on a beach somewhere in a tropic isle, if you're out in the desert and you look at that sky at night where no man-made light is touching and you get the breath of the solar system staring at you, those are all spiritual things. Do you know when most people are the most spiritual, when they most believe in God? It's right after sex. Because we've released, we've let go, our expectations are gone. So my point is, look in your life where you're doing things that you can now identify are part of your spiritual practice. And find out which ones feed you the most. As we go through this month of clarity and wisdom, this month of the Master Teacher, we want you to expand those spiritual areas of your life and do less things that are less spiritual that you do not have to do. We've talked again and again and again, and we also talked with Ora Nadrich just a little while ago, that very often we fill our time with time fillers. But they are not spirit fillers. They are not soul fillers. They are not passion fillers. So as we go forward through the rest of this month, before you show up for the Rota Psychic Fair at the end of the month in Monterey, no matter where you live, before you show up there, make sure you're doing identification of what is really important to you, and which areas have you given importance that no longer serve you that you can release before this month is over, or start to go through the releasing process. So I want to remind you that energy of Mars in Capricorn, sextiling Neptune in Pisces, each of us will be exploring our spiritual journey a little bit more. For each of us, it's different, but for all of us, it's about the wholeness of self. So I want to thank you for listening to Good Vibrations Radio. As you know, this show will be replayed on Wednesday, October 12th. In addition, Thursday, October 13th, we will have Stephen Heckhouse with his divine guidance as it comes channeled through. Now, Stephen will be at Rota at the end of the month also. So for those who are in the area and can come on out, make sure you come to the Monterey Fairgrounds, October 29th and 30th. Get your discount coupons in the Monterey County Weekly. Go ahead and make sure you're on the email list, because I'll also be emailing discount coupons to the people on the list. But make sure you get those discounts and come on out. Get a reading. Have some body work. Visit the vendors, really fabulous vendors. And all lectures are free with the price of admission. Thank you for listening to Good Vibrations Radio. Thank you for sharing this journey with all of us that bring our information to this show. Turn the lead in your life into gold. Many blessings. Namaste.
Gotta keep those love and good vibrations happening with